DeJuan weaving through traffic, flings in the corner. McCullough for three. Bingo! Kevin McCullough with another. And Shaheen Holloway wants a timeout.
And KU wins last night rather easily over Seton Hall by a final score of 91-65. KU led by 11 halftime and rolled to the victory. Six Jayhawks in double figures, including all five starters. Kevin McCullough led the way, 17 points, 10 rebounds. Jalen Wilson, double-double as well, 15 points, 13 rebounds. Freshman Grady Dick with 15 points. Bill Self with some mixed thoughts on the win over Seton Hall.
I liked we won. I liked that we did some good things offensively in stretches. I liked that we had balance. I liked that our big guys made their free throws. I think they were 7-7, weren't they? That was better. We did some good things. We didn't guard at all. Our ball screen defense was bad. We got to get back to practicing. We did enough good things, and it was nice.
It's nice. You win by 26, and we're not, you know, fully satisfied, but that's what it's like to be part of the KU basketball program. It comes to men's hoops, is that is the expectation, not only to win, but to play well and to get to the promised land, which is where they made it last year, and that's national champions. K-State men will be in action tomorrow night. They're 6-1. They'll host Wichita State, who's 4-3 at Bramlage at 8 o'clock. KU won't play again until December the 10th. Next Saturday, have 8 days off. Jayhawks now 8-1 as they'll play Missouri in Columbia next Saturday. Missouri's off to an undefeated start. All right, local sports from last night. Dusty.
Yeah, the Beloit wrestling team opened their season at 1-1 in dual action on Thursday in Phillipsburg. They lost to host school Panthers in their opener 44-24, but did come back to win the second duel against Plainville 48-30. So those are the scores from last night's dual action for Beloit. You can find all the scores for everything that happened last night at ncksports.com. Minneapolis was wrestling last night as well. Republic County lost both of their games to start the season last night on girls and boys side at Thayer Central. You can again find those scores all posted at ncksports.com.
All right.
Leading into high school hoops coming up tonight. We'll preview that as we have high school basketball. One thing I do want to say before we get into it is the Osborne Southern Cloud games for tonight have been postponed due to sickness at Southern Cloud, so they will not play tonight, but they're hoping to remake those games up some point this season. So, again, Osborne at Southern Cloud tonight has been postponed. High school hoops on our stations tonight. Katie Country 94, an online video stream at ncksports.com. Beloit Trojans taking on the Concordia Panthers. Game is at 5:50, tip off at 6 for the girls. The boys game will follow. Then on Z96.3, the Lake will have Lakeside against Tescott on the Northern Plains League showdown. Their pregame 5:50, again tip off 6 o'clock. The boys will follow. All these Northern Plains League games, if we're not on right at 5:50, it'll start. It's not always kind of a set time, but that's their goal, is to start at 6 o'clock. So we'll see if that is the case tonight. Again, those games are also online at katycountry94.com, as Jason will have the call tonight there in Tescott. Other games, the immediate area in the Northern Plains League. Natoma's at St. John's Tipton. That game in Tipton tonight. Pike Valley at Rock Hills. Lincoln's at Little River. And Thunder Ridge is hosting Chase here tonight. Sylvan Lucas at home against Bennington to start the season in the NPL as well. A non-league game there. And then in the Mid-Continent League, Plainville is at Smith Center tonight. So that's a look at the immediate area schedule here for this evening in high school hoops. So, again, always check out ncksports.com for the latest. Again, Katy Country 94, Beloit and Concordia. On the girls' side, Concordia was 4-17 a year ago, returning all four of their five starters, I should say. Trey Coleman is their new head coach. He was an assistant last season. Beloit went 10-12 last year and lost two starters to graduation. And Tatum Tejans-Peters and Lene Knight, a couple other top scorers, Miley Brown and Addison Budke, are not out this season either. So Peyton Remus is the lone returning starter for the Beloit girls after averaging 6.5 points a game a season ago. So that's a look at what we're seeing in the girls' contest here tonight between Beloit and Concordia, and what we expect to see on that side. In the boys' game, the Beloit boys were 15-7 last year. They did lose two of their top scorers, Owen Eilert and Caleb Burks, to graduation. Three starters back, led by Wyatt Brockman, Bryce Beisner, and Quinn Eilert. Noah Gerstner will have an expanded role this season as well. They're taking on a Concordia team that went 14-7 last year, but they did lose leading scorer Cav Colgren. He averaged about 19 points and 12 rebounds a game a year ago. So those are kind of the synopsis and look at the two teams that are playing tonight in the boys and girls side, and we'll hear from the coaches here momentarily as well. But it's kind of what we're looking for tonight with Beloit and Concordia on the girls and boys side there at ncksports.com. You can watch the game's online video stream on the Beloit Trojan channel, and also listen at katycountry94.com. We're on Katy Country 94 with Beloit and Concordia here tonight. And on Z96.3 the Lake, and we'll hear from coaches from Lakeside as well. The Knights playing Tescott. Tescott was 8-14 last season on the girls' side. Four starters back, so they're looking to improve on that. The Lady Knights were 13-7. They do return three starters. Kylie Bergman averaged just under 15 points a game, an all-league performer. Lauren Brummett and Taylor Betts are back as starters for the Lady Knights as well. They have a new coach in Scott Germark, who we'll again hear from momentarily, as he leads this group here in 2022-23. And on the boys' side, Tescott's bringing back four starters from a 3-17 team. They had a very good football season, a very athletic group, so they're hoping to improve on that 3-17 record. While Lakeside had a great year at 17-6, sub-state runners-up a year ago. They do have to replace their entire starting lineup, though, as Ross Hudson's their leading returning scorer. He averaged 4.5 points a game last year for Lakeside. So it'll be a different look this season for the Knight boys as they get ready to go here in Tescott this evening. Again, in the Northern Plains League, we'll have pregame coverage 5:50 for the girls. Tip-off is 6, and the boys follow. Again, you can always listen online at katycountry94.com for all of our high school hoops. Jason will be doing Lakeside Tescott tonight if you have anything you want to add.
Yeah, I'm just looking forward to it. I always like to see a team like the Lakeside boys, like you said, just had to replace everybody. I like to see how that flows the first game of the season. You don't want to overdo it with the first game of the season. It could be sometimes those games are a little rough for both teams, and with shooting wise and stuff like that. Sometimes your only officials, the only time you've dealt with officials are with a jamboree, if you've even played in one of those. So foul trouble might be a thing for the first game or two. So you don't want to put too much into night one, but it is interesting, a team like that, to see exactly how they're going to replace all those pieces.
Yeah, that's going to be the question for the Lakeside boys for sure. And so, again, Lakeside and Tescott here tonight on Z96.3 Through the Lake and katycountry94.com.
The Beloit girls, let's start there. Obviously, they don't have their full team from last year, and it's not just because of graduation.
Yeah.
They have two very talented young ladies that have chosen to play volleyball instead of play travel club volleyball during the basketball season. That would be Miley Brown and Addison Budke. And so that takes away, you know, Tatum Tejas Peters was their leading scorer last year, along with Addie Budke and then Miley Brown. So they lose their three top scorers from last year, but two not due to graduation. And then they also lose their leading rebounder. They lose their best perimeter defender. They may possibly have lost their best interior defender. They've also lost their best three-point shooter. Mm-hmm. And it isn't graduation. And now, this is something I want to save for another day to discuss it, because it's going to take some time for all of us to talk about this. Because there's, when I was in school, I took debate, and I went to debate tournaments. And you can present the pro and the con, the negative and the positive. You can be on either side of the argument, and it just depends on how it's assigned to you. And you have information to back up your argument, and then whoever's good enough to be full of BS or debate or whatever, but try to back it up with facts and research, which today I think a lot of people would fail in debate, including our politicians. So when that happened, I always remember, like, there were certain topics I would get, and I'm like, you know what, this can be a tough one, because really the judges could go either way, because this is a topic that could go either way. Then sometimes it's like, man, that other side's going to have to really be bad, and we're going to have to be really good to convince the judges that this is the way you probably should lean on this topic. And I think this is one of those that you could pick a side and on each side, and you could argue it very well. And the bottom line is, it's up to the kids. It's up to Miley Brown, Addison Budke, in this case, to play volleyball. If that's what they love to do, and they're able to do it, and that's what they want to do, and they're willing to give up Tuesday and Friday nights in front of the crowds for high school basketball in order to play volleyball, to, you know, get better as a volleyball player, whether the goal is to get a Division I scholarship, Division II scholarship, whether to get a scholarship, or maybe there's not even a goal about that. It's just about getting better to where, hey, Beloit can win their first ever state volleyball championship if we keep getting better ourselves individually. I don't know exactly the goals for everybody. Most people, it's about scholarships. It's about, this is my best sport, I better specialize in it. And it's also a situation where you love the sport, hopefully. If you're specializing in a sport, I sure as heck hope you love it. And I can go both sides of this. One, when I was in school, my favorite sport was basketball, okay? I didn't have the options that all these kids have today, mm-hmm. back in the early 90s. case, I didn't have the opportunity to play travel basketball during football season because I like football, but I like basketball more than football. I never had an option to play basketball during football season. And if I had, I probably would have done it. Mm-hmm. So for people out there that want to criticize kids for walking away from your high school sport to go play a traveling sport during the school year, just keep that in mind. If you were in school and you love one sport way more than another, all right, and it happens to be the sport you're best at, it's kind of would be somewhat of a no-brainer that you would go ahead and do that. Now, the difficult part is if you're good at two sports and you really enjoy both sports and you enjoy your classmates, but you also want to get better at volleyball, but you still like basketball, and then you're torn. Then you have a really difficult decision, and ultimately you have to decide what's best for yourself. You don't want to have regrets. Now, the flip side of the argument would be, the flip side, of course, would be, you can play traveling volleyball during the summer. Why do you have to do it and take away from your local town? Why do you have to do it and take it away from your local community? Why does it end up, it ends up hurting your teammates, your classmates? It ends up hurting your coach and your team on the floor if you're a really good player. And obviously this would be an example of that. And I'm not saying one way is right or the other. If I'm a basketball coach and I'm thinking I'm going to have certain players out and they suddenly decide to play another sport that isn't tied to the school, I'm probably disappointed. And rightfully so. At the same time, if I'm one of those kids that says, you know what, I just don't love basketball, but man, I'm already a good volleyball player. I can get even better. How can I get mad at a young person that is having opportunity to do something that they really, really enjoy? Because when you get into life, you're going to do a lot of things you don't enjoy. You're going to have jobs you don't enjoy. So when you're young, if you can do something you enjoy, why not? Now, I will say you're giving up something to get something. Okay? You're not going to have the whole community of Beloit at your traveling volleyball tournament right now.
Mm-hmm.
But you will on Tuesday and Friday night. You'll have the band, you'll have the dancers, you have the cheer squad. There is something about the environment. All right. Now, I've heard older people tell me they're letting down the school or they're letting down the community. I'm not talking about these two girls. I'm talking about it happens everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
All right. This is not the first time this has happened. And I would be like, once again, I'd say, you know what? I understand where you're coming from a little bit, but you're a little bit too harsh here, because what did you enjoy when you played sports? If you're 60 or 70 or 80 or 40 years old, you know, what did you enjoy? Because if you had the option, you may very well do the same thing. So it's very easy to criticize and jump on somebody and say, well, you should do this or you should do that, whether it's sports, whether it's academics, whether it's anything in life at any age. It's easy. I mean, we see it all the time now with college and pro. Why is this kid going to this college? And now, oh, he changed his mind. He's going to another college. And now suddenly you love the kid and now you hate the kid. Oh, you love the kid. Now you send him horrible tweets. Like, wait a minute, you love the kid, now you don't like the kid. Well, you never cared about the kid. All you cared about is your school. Now, that comes back to the other part. Do you care about your school, or do you actually care about the school and the kids? And for me, this is where I land on it. Listen, I would love to see these players at smaller schools, and we're talking really 3A and down. I would love to see these kids be able to play all the sports they want to play. I hate to see kids specialize 12 months a year in one particular sport. I don't like to see it. I understand why you do it in the bigger school, because you're not going to make the team on other sports. You kind of have to specialize. But for the smaller schools, it makes it harder on smaller schools when you lose some of your better athletes that end up specializing or choosing a sport. Now, it's interesting. Football doesn't have to deal with this because most of the best athletes play football, right? But what if there were more and more kids that wanted to play basketball and suddenly turned against football? Then football would have the same issue. Basketball is battling with volleyball with this. And it's across the state and the country that there are not a lot of post players that are as good as they once were in high school basketball, because a lot of those bigger, taller players are playing volleyball 12 months out of a year. We know of a situation, and I know for a fact, the situation not too far from here, where a girl volleyball player was great at volleyball, unbelievable volleyball player, and told her coach before the basketball season, listen, I like to play basketball, but volleyball is my number one priority. I'm going to play on a traveling team. I won't be available for some Fridays or weekends or whatever, and I understand if you don't want me to go out. Well, she's over 6 foot tall. She's talented. How does your basketball coach turn that down? You say, okay, great. But then when it came to sub-state, she wasn't in the building. sub-state semifinal on a Friday night. She wasn't in the building because she already had traveled and committed. She had to be on the road to go to some volleyball tournament. And now that's where people hear that story and say, now, wait a minute. Couldn't you at least given up one volleyball tournament to be there for sub-state? I would say, yeah, I would think so. But I don't know the situation. Mm-hmm. If you committed to the volleyball team and traveling and you said you'd be there for every tournament and you told the basketball coach for the season, here's the dates I'm going to miss, and he knew you're not going to be able to play on sub-state Friday and Saturday, well, then that was all out in the open. There's no surprises, and nobody should really get upset about it. And I would say you should let the team vote on it. Secretly, privately say, do you want a player that's a part-time player on this team that's going to focus on volleyball, or do you not want that person on the team? Because here's the thing I have. If you're not fully invested, if you're not fully, like our situation we were just talking about, if you're not fully invested in playing basketball, then you're probably better off doing what you want to be fully invested in. Mm-hmm. And it hurts your team if you're not fully invested. And yes, it hurts your team when you don't go out and you play a traveling sport, whatever it may be, and not do the high school sport. It does hurt your team, yes. It hurts your school in regards to the program you don't go out for. I don't know if it really hurts your school that much. It's more about your team, okay? The logo you represent, the school name on your jersey, and so forth. But at the same time, if you're not fully into it, you're hurting the team if you are on the team, and you're taking away time from kids that really want to play basketball, or vice versa. Kids that want to specialize in basketball that don't go out for volleyball. That mm-hmm. happens too, by the way. Mm-hmm. So let's not sit here and say it's just a traveling volleyball thing. It happens in various sports. And so, you know, for me, you can debate it any which way come Sunday. You really, truly can. But the bottom line is this. The bottom line is this. It's your life. And if you are 16, 26, 36, 46, 56, 66, 76, 86, if you have the power to choose what you would like to do, you have to do what's best for you. That's where I eventually land. It might make other people unhappy. Well, if you're going about the world trying to make everybody happy, you're in for a rude awakening, because that will never, ever, ever happen. You will never please everyone. So you want to make a decision that you are confident in and that you will not regret. That's what you want to do. Now it could happen that these girls end up playing basketball next year. They sit a year out, they come back, they play basketball and say, you know what? The volleyball thing wasn't what I thought it was. Or they'd be like, that's the best decision I made. And then these other girls get an opportunity now to play at the high school level in basketball and end up being really good players and everybody's happy. But we are seeing more traveling sports infiltrate high school athletics. And to me, it's not the kids' fault at all for choosing what they want to do, because those are options available to them. I would have probably done the same thing and chose basketball over other sports if I were able to have that option, which I didn't back in the day. The point of contention shouldn't be with any of the kids making these decisions. To me, the point of contention should be, how about the volleyball traveling teams just, you know, shut it down for 3 months and let these kids play their school sport? That's the argument. That's the argument, is all of these traveling institutions, you have all spring and summer to do this. Now why are you infiltrating December and November and January? Because those organizations, those club teams, they're the ones that do all this. And guess what? They make money.
Absolutely.
And they promise the kids what? You need to be seen. If you don't go out, it's going to hurt you. If you don't play on this team, it's going to hurt you. And they use all this stuff. And every one of them is going to tell you can be a D1 or D2 full ride scholarship. Let me tell you something. My kid played traveling basketball the last couple of years during the summer and spring. He's enjoyed it. All right. I don't know if he's going to do it again next year. It's helped him. It has. But his goal has never been to be a Division I full ride scholarship. His goal is, one, to get better as a player, which hopefully we'll see that the next couple of years. Secondly, he enjoys it. So he does it. All right. And if he had a chance to do it during other sports seasons during high school, maybe he would. But do you know that the statistic of all, there's tons of traveling teams. I'm just talking about basketball now, but you got traveling volleyball left and right. You got tons of kids associated, lots of parents. Do you know what the percentage of those, all those traveling basketball and volleyball kids, girls and boys, you know what the percentage of those traveling kids? And baseball and softball you could throw in there as well. There's tons of traveling baseball and softball. Do you know what the percentage of those kids get scholarships? And I'm not talking D1 scholarships. I'm talking just a scholarship in general. What do you think the percentage is?
I'm going to say 10, and I think that might be too high.
I was going to say 5.
Two.
Yeah.
2%. So every 100 kids that play traveling sports, 2 will get a full ride scholarship. So if your goal is all about getting a full ride scholarship and that's the only reason you're doing it and you don't love the sport, but mom and dad are pushing you to save them money, but there's no guarantee you're going to get the full ride. And all these coaches and travel organizations are going to tell you, you need to do this so you can be seen, whether you're a freshman, sophomore, or junior, so that you can get a full ride scholarship. They are selling you a bit of, well, they're selling a lot of BS is what they're selling you. What they need to tell you is, listen, you can, you have a chance. Those chances aren't great. You work really hard, you could, but just be prepared that you might not. But that's not what you hear. It's just like when community colleges recruit hard and they bring in 100 kids and they promise you they're all going to play, and then they have cutdowns, and then you don't even make the team. Well, wait a minute, I was promised I was going to play. No, you promised the opportunity to make the team, and you didn't make it. You didn't make the cut. But I chose to enroll here and do this. Yeah, you know, there are people who told me many times that they've been misled by coaches in regards to being recruited, which that happens all the time at every level.
Yeah.
This is no different with traveling sports. They're recruiting. They have connections. This is no different. You're basically recruiting for traveling sports kids to play, and those kids usually have to pay to play, all right? And then they got to pay to travel. Now, some organizations are funded by well-off people. Maybe they don't have to pay as much. And then the question is, how much money did you spend to get the full ride? If you get the full ride, that's if. How much money did you spend? So here's my question. Is the goal to get a full ride, or is the goal to play the sport you love? And if you happen to get a scholarship, that's icing on the cake. And I can't answer that question. Every single individual, it's different. Are all these kids doing these traveling sports anytime during the year, whether it interferes with high school sports or not, because they love it? Or are they doing it because mom and dad pushes them to do it? I'll bet you there's a fraction of both. Mm-hmm. I'll bet you there are parents that want their kid to enjoy what they do, and they're happy with the kid making whatever decision it is. If they decide to stick with high school basketball or do try and volleyball, that's great. I support whatever my kid chooses. I say, way to go, parents, because that's the way you should probably do it. Let the kid make the decision. Say, hey, we can make it work one way or the other. We will support that. All right? But if they go into it going, come on, dear, come on, man, come on, son, come on, daughter, You're good. You could get a full ride scholarship, and you could save us a lot of money by doing that. And then they push you to where you either get burnt out or you don't even love it to start with. And I've seen examples of this. So I didn't want to go too far with this, but I just think at the end of the day, the problem I have is that whether it's volleyball, baseball, softball, basketball, when you are, it's those organizations and those clubs that are now taking away kids from those schools. And the big schools, it doesn't affect as much. There's enough numbers. But once it infiltrates to the lower level schools, 3A, 2A, 1A, and you take away one really good or two good players or three off of a team at these lower levels, it is a severe hit to that team's chances for success. It's a severe hit to the coaching staff. All right? And I don't blame the kids for doing it. What I'm saying is I wish the traveling organizations and clubs would have at least said, you know what? November through February is off limits. But it's not. So I think when people get upset with young people making a decision to do a sport all year long or to give up a high school sport to do a traveling sport during the school year, I think your angst and your disappointment is pointed maybe in the wrong direction. Because if that wasn't an option, as it was not for me growing up, you'd be playing all your high school sports. So how do you get mad for individuals that have more options than you used to? I mean, you really got to sit down and think about it for a second and say, what if I had those options? What would I have done? Yes, you're giving up something to hopefully get something. And do you love doing this and you not enjoy the other one? Well, then that's probably makes the decision a little bit easier. I guarantee you these kids, whatever ones we talk about across the state and the country that deal with this, some of these decisions are easy for some of them. Some of them are agonizingly tough. And at the end of the day, if I'm a parent and I talk to my kid, I'm going to say to my kid, listen, and I've already done it, we will support you in whatever you decide. I'm not going to tell you what you should do. I can tell you, here's your options, and I will support the option you choose as long as I can make it happen. If I can drive you to all these traveling tournaments and that's what you want to do, great. Now, if I tell you from the very beginning, I'm sorry, I don't have the money, I can't afford it, we don't have the time, well then guess what? Now you're probably not going to do it. That would be the only thing that would keep me from not supporting my kid is I can't actually be there. I want to be there and support him and cheer him on from the stands. But I can tell you from an atmosphere environment, going to a traveling basketball tournament versus a high school basketball game, it isn't even close. It isn't even close.
You got 10 people cheering for you.
You've got just your parents. That's it. You don't have your community coming in and cheering for you. You don't have the band. You don't have the cheerleaders. You don't have your school colors. I mean, it is different. All right? And you're a bigger deal if you're a really good player on your high school team, whereas if you're just a Joe or a Jan on a travel team. Everybody's good on the traveling team for the most part. But at the end of the day, I say, listen, if you as a young person want to play basketball all year, volleyball all year, you want to do football all year, you want to do baseball all year, whatever it may be, if you want to do music all year, if that's what you truly love and that's what you want to do, then me as your dad or your mom or whatever, I will support you in any which way possible. Will I tell you the pros and cons of each side? Sure. I've already done that before with my kid. And I will continue to do that. But they have to make the decision so that they feel good with it moving forward.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of it just through my nephew, of what that is and what that entails. Being on a travel team now, obviously that's not during the winter, that's during the summer, spring and summer, that we're going to these tournaments, but it is. And then one of the ones that's really interesting to me is when you're at Hy-Vee, right, and like you're playing on, there's three courts and your team's playing on like the middle court and there's two on the edges,
yes,
and you're trying to scream at them saying, hey, you're doing a good job or something like that. That's the thing about the atmosphere that I'm thinking of while you were talking about, right?
Yeah.
Like you can't, like they can't hear what you're saying to them, and then like you're trying to watch it in the middle of the court and it's like, what are we doing here? And so that's the whole atmosphere that's different about the traveling part of it. But, you know, you do see it. And, you know, I can personally say that I don't want to get too personal, but I'll say this. I saw a kid that loved it, right, that was his passion. He wanted to do it. When you're talking about the 2 out of 100, it's not just because they're not good enough. I'll put it at that. Mm-hmm. It's because they put a lot of work in, and then at the end, it's like, and then in my personal situation with my nephew, I know that his high school coach didn't help the process of moving on to the next level and keeping his mind right. There was other things that were involved I'm not going to talk about.
Sure.
That 2 out of 100, is there's a lot that goes into that. That's either you're good enough to get one of them, or you decide that that's not your route anymore. That you don't want to go play college basketball anymore, or volleyball, or football, or whatever it is. That, you know, I thought this is what was going to be, and then something just changes.
Right.
And so there's a lot that goes into all that when you're talking about it and when you're doing it that much.
Mm-hmm.
And so, because I did, I saw a kid that loved it, that wanted to play college basketball. Mm-hmm. He's not right now.
Right.
But, you know, that was his decision too, right? Like we always told him, it's like, whatever you decide here at the end of this,
right,
is you're still your decision. Like, we're not going to be disappointed as parents or me as an uncle if you don't go play college basketball. Like, that's not in our process.
And it might not work out the way you hope. There's no guarantees, no matter what decision you make.
Yeah.
But you just go with what you feel is the best for you at that time.
Yeah. And so, like you said, there's so many examples of all of it that, you know, it's going to be a different story for every individual athlete and player that does whatever they decide to do with traveling sports.
One of the problems, too, for a talented young person is, in sports in particular, is that you get pulled by the coaches. You get pressure from coaches, whether it be your volleyball, your basketball, your football, your wrestling, your baseball, your softball, cross country, tennis, golf. It don't matter. You know, if you're really good, you're going to be like, you know what? I really, really, really need you on the football team. But I really, really like to focus on basketball, and that's what I love. Yeah, but I really could. So you get a little pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're a teenager, which most high school kids are teenagers, listen, that's not easy to deal with. You don't want to disappoint a teacher that happens to be also your football coach or your basketball coach or your volleyball coach. So you get torn in different directions. And then you might go home, and then mom and dad are pulling you in different directions. And now you're sitting there going, well, I'm going to piss off somebody. I'm sorry for my language, but you're going to tick off somebody All right, no matter what you do. And then you feel like it's a loss-loss, and it shouldn't be that way. You should feel really good about your decision. Same way about picking a college to attend, whether you're an athlete or whether you're just a student-athlete or just a student. You shouldn't feel bad about upsetting people because you chose where you want to go. But I know there are students that feel bad because there are a whole bunch of jerks out there on social media and everything else, K-State, KU fans included, that make these kids feel like dirt because they decided to go to K-State instead of KU or went to KU instead of K-State. And these people never met these kids. And that takes away from the enjoyment of, hey, I'm excited. I chose my school and this is where I'm going to go. And it's kind of the same way here. You know what? I chose to play volleyball or basketball during the high school sports season. And I'm pretty comfortable with that. But at the same time, you know, you still go to school. You might hear other people talking about why aren't they out? And you've got to deal. That's another con to the issue from that standpoint is you're still going to the school. But then you're not there on game nights because you're doing other stuff. And that is your right to do that. And I support kids, what they choose to do, as long as it's within the realm of the law, of course. And I think that's tough for communities to understand. I think that's tough for older people to understand, people that didn't have the options that these kids have today. It makes it difficult. And so I think it takes some guts to completely follow where you want to go and have conviction to choose to do what you do. Mm-hmm. And whether that's playing the basketball or doing the volleyball or whatever sport it may be. And so I really feel for these kids, because another thing about the angst I have towards those organizations doing it during high school season is that you are putting those kids in a tougher spot by having your clubs and traveling teams during the high school sports season. You are putting those kids in really tough spots. And granted, they get to choose if they're going to join your team or not. But mm-hmm. if you didn't offer it, then we wouldn't have any kind of discussion right now. Could you just wait and do it during the off season, during the summer? And traveling sports is going to continue to getting bigger and bigger. It's a huge money-making business. More and more clubs, more and more organizations pop up all the time. And this is going to be a continued trend. It's not going to change anytime soon.
No, not at all.
And so that affects your high school programs. It affects your coaches. It affects, you know, it obviously your communities, that your alums, you know, that didn't have those options back in the day, like me or Dusty or whoever. Then you kind of feel like, well, I don't understand. You don't get it because you don't have all the information. But if you really did, you might say, I probably would have done the same thing. Or maybe you would say, I definitely wouldn't have, which you don't know because you weren't presented with that option. So it's easy. My point is, it's easy to judge from afar. It's easy to judge from afar. And I think coaches are even put in a tough little spot, too, is I don't want to put too much pressure on this kid to play my sport because I really want him so I can be successful. And in some schools, there's a lot of pressure for you to keep your job as a head coach, which is still silly because you don't get paid a lot to be a high school coach. But you want to be a coach. You love coaching. So if you're missing a couple of really good players, that affects whether you win or lose. And next thing you know, the school board or one parent or one somebody gets upset at you because you're not winning enough. And then you get fired. And then that affects you as a teacher because now maybe you don't have tenure. So now because of a coaching job that's supplemental income, you're going to lose your real-time job. I mean, there's a trickle-down effect to all of this.
Mm. Right. I would just tell the kids, you have an inner circle. You know, listen to that inner circle. Don't take criticism from anyone you wouldn't take advice from.
You're going to find out who your real friends are.
Yeah. And unfortunately, sometimes the loudest people that are going to say that you are making a mistake, whichever decision you're doing, sometimes the loudest person never had that option, and that's what they're dealing with. They're dealing with their own stuff. They didn't have the option. They didn't get invited to the traveling team, and they're dealing with that still. And so, yeah, I would just say you got your little inner circle. Stick with that. It's tough for kids that might maybe just choose, we even within the school, wrestling and basketball, or in fall now you have for the girls softball and volleyball. You know, you might have friends on both teams, and that's tough anyway. But
softball's in the spring, by the way.
Well, yeah, I guess Nebraska's.
Yeah, that's right. So, the spring you have three sports to choose from sometimes.
So you might be torn a little bit that way too. It's never going to be easy, and so I would just say limit your circle to the inner circle and mm-hmm. listen to them, and And but still, it's your decision at the end. I mean, you can take their advice, right. You could take their opinion, but you got to make your own decision. And
And just to clarify, maybe we misspoke earlier. D1s are your full rides. Okay, yeah. you can get partial scholarships or quite a bit. I mean, it depends on your situation in regards to a D2 or, like, for instance, I had a partial scholarship in tennis at Bethany. I didn't get a full ride, but it helped to pay some of my books and tuition. Mm-hmm. But you know, D1, I just told you the 2%, and the 2% I was told was getting any kind of scholarship money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's what I meant. Maybe I didn't say it right. But
I think that's kind of how you presented it.
I thought I did. Maybe somebody misheard it. But yeah. 2% of kids that are in traveling sports, this is what I found. Now, maybe it's changed over time or whatever, and I've had other people tell me this, that are involved much more in traveling sports than I am, and one that even is become somewhat of an organizer, believe it or not. He even told me, it's like 2%. 2%. Of these kids playing traveling sports will get some sort of scholarship. Let me make that clear. It might be 0.3% get a full ride on a D1, and another 1.7 it's partials. So what are the goals? I don't, you know, if you enjoy playing and you want to play, I hope it isn't all about just getting a scholarship, because if it's just about getting a scholarship, you might be disappointed. But if it's about playing the sport you love and you want to play it all year long and it's an available option to you, then I say, by golly, you do what you want to do. All right. So Shauna Remus and the Boy Lady Trojans, they are a young team with the losses of players that we mentioned at graduation or choosing to do another sport. Here's Coach Remus on the young team.
We just got a group of kids that are just working super hard, you know, and they're just giving us everything they've got, and we're teaching them the base and the skills that are going to be needed to be successful. But we are young and inexperienced, and we're trying to replace some pieces from last year's team, but we've got some kids, I think, that are willing to step up and take on some of those roles.
That's the thing, too. I mean, that's more opportunities for other kids now that wouldn't have had these opportunities now will. And well, and that's the thing I look at.
That's what I would.
And they're fully invested to want to play.
That's what the example you gave of the girl that didn't play at Substate, right? That told her team that she would maybe be gone sometimes. It's one of those things where you have to decide, where do you want that? Do you want to be good this year? Maybe not make it as far as you could because you're good, but then you have a good record, and then you lose to somebody you don't think you should lose to,
right?
Something like that. Or do you just want to move on, right? Do you want to move to the future? Mm-hmm. And maybe we're not going to have a 17-4 record this year because of that.
Yeah.
Maybe we're going to be like 10-10.
But it'll benefit us in the long run.
Somebody else is going to take that spot that wanted to be there for a full year and wanted to grow and develop as a basketball player.
Speed up their development.
And then the next year, they're so good that it's like, oh, okay, well, we could have been this last year, but this person's good this year, and we're ready to go this year. So you kind of got to – that's another decision, I think, as a team you would have to make. Mm-hmm. Do we want to – continue to develop, or do we just want to stunt some development, maybe some from somebody else that's willing to be here and ready to be here? And so that's a perfect thing. What you're talking about is there's girls here now that have an opportunity for a boy to develop maybe a little quicker, get more time. Mm-hmm. It might be rough at times early in the season, and I think it probably will be, but once they start to develop, and we've seen Shauna do this before, that she can develop a team, and they're obviously going to be better later in the year. And so I think that's something that probably is going to be overlooked here early in the season with this team particularly.
Yeah, I agree with you. And see, in regards to making those choices, once again, all of this is a trickle-down effect. That puts a lot more pressure on coaches, because if you're a coach that is maybe kind of on a hot seat, you're going to take that 6-foot player and play, get as many wins as you can.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're comfortable in your skin and you know, hey, you know, I'm going to be here for a while, and I think this is the best way to work out my program. It's my program. I'm the head coach. Then, you know what? I love for you to be on the team, but if you're not fully invested and can't play all the time, then I'm sorry. We're going to have other kids that you got to move on. Now what happens is things leak out in your community. Oh, well, she said she was going to play and coach didn't want her. Now, see, that's misinformation, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's other things that coaches have to deal with.
Yep.
Ryan, I was head coach of the Beloit Boys, and the Beloit Boys last year went 15-7, lost in the Substate semifinals at Council Grove. They lost a couple key players off their last year's team, but they got a good core that's coming back. You got Wyatt Brockman, all-leaguer, outstanding player, had 39 in a game last year. Bryce Beisner's all-league as well. Quinn Islett, returning starter. A kid named Gerstner plays for them as well, so I'll have a little bit of interest in him tonight. But what's interesting is last year they had about three or four practices, had to play Concordia first game of the year in the boys' side, and were winning and doing very well, and then I think they kind of ran out of some gas.
Yeah.
They weren't in basketball shape, and how could you be? And Concordia had two full weeks of practices or whatever it was. Well, this year, Beloit, unfortunately, due to Kingman, Beloit had their full allotment of practices with everybody, and so Coach Eilert certainly thinks that should help them be ready tonight in Concordia.
We've had some good practices. This year we've actually been able to, a year ago we were only to get four practices in with everybody. This year we've had a chance to be together a little bit more, and I'm hoping that, gives us a little bit more of an advantage than kind of starting from behind the past couple of years. But practices have been good. Kids are working hard, and just like always, they're excited and ready to go Friday night.
I mean, and we have this in every single sport. We just talked about it earlier, whether kids are choosing to play a traveling sport or just to sit out a sport because they need to maybe get healthier from being banged up from a sport, or they just simply need a break. Sometimes that happens. I mean, I know of a very talented individual that used to play basketball that now plays football and baseball, and he doesn't play basketball. And then there's a kid that's played basketball that I've coached since he was in third grade, and he's a really good athlete. He played football. He had an injury. He doesn't feel comfortable right now on the basketball court from what I understand, which I don't blame him. I mean, understanding his injury, I get it. Maybe he'll be out next year. Maybe not. I don't know. So he's going to take a break, and he's going to focus on getting 100%. So he's a kid that would have been some experience inside. That is choosing not to play basketball. So whether you're choosing to play traveling ball or whether you're choosing to sit out and get a break, the bottom line is you're sitting out a season for your high school, which is fine. There's no criticism here whatsoever coming from me, because some kids don't play football. They play basketball and baseball. Some kids play golf and they play football, but they don't play basketball and so forth and so on. Some do wrestling and football and don't do a spring sport.
Mm-hmm.
And then other people told me, well, you had your break during the summer. Well, there's traveling sports in the summer. I can tell you my son maybe needed a break from traveling sports and not play football. So you can continue to play this carousel as we go. But the bottom line is, I think Beloit's definitely got enough numbers in the post, but they're young, a sophomore, a freshman. So they're giving up a little bit by the one kid not playing basketball in regards to experience inside. But you've got Bryce Beisner, who's an outstanding kid in person, let alone a basketball player, and he's good at Christmas lights. And Quinn Eilert's been through the battles, and Wyatt has been, and my son's come off the bench and has provided some spurts sometimes and helped the team, and so now he's going to have to grow into an expanded role. But I think the biggest thing I look at with Beloit is they have to, and unfortunately, Kyler Burks is not playing, of course. He had the car accident in June, and that's a big blow for this team, because Kyler Burks was coming on and really working hard at his game, and I think he would have been a very vital piece to this year's team. He would have provided Beloit with that extra guard who was not afraid to dive on the floor, played gritty defense. He might not score a lot, although he was developing an outside shot. He would be a perfect player, role player for this team to provide some rest for perhaps a Wyatt Brockman or for a Noah Gerstner or for a Quinn Eilert. And so I think the question for me with Beloit going in the season is, I think they have enough depth in the post, although they are inexperienced after Beisner, but that's something they should get as they go. And then the second concern I would have is depth. Especially in the backcourt. Depth after Brockman, after Quinn Eilert, after Noah Gerstner, Jackson Cheney, Cole Jones, there might be some others. They have a chance. And I heard Ryan on Locker Room Chat this week. They're kids that have opportunities to get minutes here. Mm-hmm. That if they're good enough and get, and coach, of course, gets comfortable with you, that's part of that with any coach or team, then you can maybe go in for a spell and rest a Wyatt Brockman and give him a breather, because he's got to play really hard on both ends because he might be your lockdown defender and your best scorer. So those are things you have to factor in as a coach. So that's why depth is important. You don't necessarily want 10 or 11 or 12 great players, okay, because it's hard to find minutes. But you definitely would want a guard that you can slide in and feel like there's no drop-off, and you love to throw in a post with no drop-off and ideally have a 7 or 8 player rotation. And some teams have depth in the post and nothing in the backcourt. Others have depth in the backcourt, don't have depth in the post. Some teams don't have size at all. Some teams don't have a point guard. Some teams don't have shooters, but they have a great defense. And so as a coach, you're not going out there and plucking a recruit. Here, okay, let's go get this kid from Spain to come in and help us. Nope, you have what you have. And unfortunately, Kyler, who will not play this year, obviously, he would have been an important piece of the puzzle this year for this team, which, once again, whether it's a car accident, an injury, a kid choosing not to play a sport, that does give others opportunities to play at the varsity level. So Beloit Concordia will be interesting tonight. Concordia was 14-7 a year ago. The Beloit boys are 15-7, and it was a really good game to start the year last year at Concordia tonight. The Concordia girls really struggled early last year, and throughout the year they're young. They have more experience coming back. So we look forward to that. Dusty with the call. I'll be the engineer slash parent in the stands. And Dusty will get a call of the games, and we'll have that live video stream as well. And also on KD Country 94, KDCountry94.com. The Lakeside Tescott games tonight will be on Z9 6.3 Lake as Jason will make his first trek to Tescott. Tescott, Kansas. And Scott Germark is the first-year head coach for the Lakeside Lady Knights. His thoughts on the matchup at Tescott.
As I watch game film on them, you know, they got some tall girls. Mainly we're going to get 2-3 zone. They want to slow it down where we might want to try to force things and be, you know, more of an up-tempo team this year. And, you know, if we just – and it might be, you know, a little bit rough at the beginning, but as we go along in the game, hopefully we can come out with a win and get things started off right.
Always interesting when you have a change at the helm at any situation, whether it be a business or whether it be, you know, the head of your basketball team or football team, whatever sport may be, or the new superintendent comes into town and he's got a new hospital administrator. We could go on and on. It always is interesting to see how kids adapt to a new person that's in charge.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, different philosophies are going to come into play a lot when that happens, and, you know, you hope you have the personnel to be able to do some of the different things you might want to do, or maybe you just – basically what you got to do as a coach, I think, is work to what you have, and Scott's been there a while. He knows what Lakeside has and who's there, so he's got an opportunity to see what he can do there at the head coach for the girls there.
And the boys, Drew Dusky, the keys to beating Tescott tonight on the road.
Look at how they did for football this year. You know, they got athletes. And, you know, I don't know if that always transitions from football to basketball, but, you know, I expect it to be a good game. It's going to be tough competition for us, and we're going to have to make sure, you know, we're running through the motions correctly on offense and playing well and spacing things out. And defensively, we've got to play good defense. We've got to keep guys from driving into the lane. And when shots goes up, we've got to get physical and box out. And those are the couple key things we've been talking about in these first few practices.
All right, so Jason has a call tonight. Lakeside Tescott this evening on Z96.3 The Lake. Are we starting at 6 or maybe 6:15?
That's what I said. The goal is always to start at 6, but that doesn't always happen, and so there's never a you don't know. They play JV before, and it could go into overtime.
Those are the greatest things ever when JV games go to overtime or double overtime. And listen, I think officials do a great job, but you should be fired if you let a JV game go to double overtime.
Yeah.
I experienced that in Ellsworth. I even knew one of the officials. I said, what are you doing? I said, you got to call an extra foul and make sure there's an odd number
on the
board.
There was a foul that happened underneath somewhere.
Yeah.
That you can just be like, oh, you got
to
shoot.
I mean, like, for crying out loud, the kid's shooting a free throw and a chance to tie it and send double overtime. You know what? Mysteriously, the kid steps across the line, and nobody's watching it anyway. So just go ahead and call it violation, game over, and let's move to the varsity game. I'm joking. Settle down, people. All right, so that's we went through the whole high school schedule, correct?
Yeah.
So that's all posted at ncksports.com. Latest athletes of the week posted there as well. We covered the basketball side at the very beginning of the show in regards to KU and K-State. Now we can focus on college football, where, of course, it is a big weekend. It's the Big 12 championship game. It is K-State, the Wildcats, taking on TCU. Chris Klieman, head coach of the Wildcats, on the approach to a rematch because K-State lost in Fort Worth to TCU earlier this year on October 22nd, 38-28, a game where Adrian Martinez got hurt. Will Howard came in, played well, then he got hurt. Jake Rubley came in, then Howard came back in. Anyway, K-State was up 28-10 in that game. Looked like they were going to cruise to a victory. Instead, TCU came back and won. Rematch coming up tomorrow morning, 11 o'clock, Arlington, AT&T Stadium. And K-State going to the Sugar Bowl no matter what happens. And TCU perhaps going to the playoff no matter what happens. Coach Klieman on the approach on the rematch.
You don't want to reinvent the wheel in any respect because there's a reason why we're here. There's a reason why they are here. Yeah, you've got to make some adjustments to the plan and offense, defense, and teams. It's going to still come down to a lot of one-on-one matchups, but try not to make too much of it other than our players, their players know who they're going against. But schematically, you still have to do what your kids know.
That is very true. I mean, you don't want to change everything. This has gotten you to where you are. This is the you're good enough to be in the top 10 in the country. And Sonny Dykes, you know, what a year he's had. Head coach for TCU. Some people are freaking out Gary Patterson got fired. Sonny Dykes has done a wonderful job. He sees improvements from K-State since they first played in October.
They've kind of evolved that way. I think they've really improved offensively. since then. I mean, I think the last four or five games, their offense has really taken off. I think, again, as they've kind of figured out their identity and probably what he's comfortable with. And their special teams, I think, have really improved over the last month to 6 weeks as well.
All right. So, K-State, TCU, Big 12 championship game. What are you looking for here, Dusty? K-State's in the title game for what, the fourth time, I believe it is. What are you looking at here in this game as a Wildcat fan?
I just want to see them go out and play. Like there's, like you said, the Sugar Bowl is pretty much where they're going. So like, it would be fun to hold up a trophy at the end of the game, obviously, and say you're Big 12 champions for the third time in program history or whatever. But you know, it's about what I want to see is just continuing to develop and get better with some of these guys, and then especially like a Will Howard at quarterback, you know, this is an extra opportunity for him to get more reps and continue to grow of what he's already done so well over the last 3 or 4 weeks. And so it's weird going into a game like this where you kind of know where you're going after it. You don't have to win it. You don't want to. I mean, you want to win. You're a K-State, but there's really no consequences for you, win or lose, other than the fact that you can't, again, claim that you're a Big 12 champion. So just go out and play. Would love to not see any big injuries, obviously, in this game and get out of here healthy and hopefully go play the Sugar Bowl against Bama or somebody like that and get another opportunity there to see a really good team like you are this week. And I think that's going to be the key for this is, you know, win or lose, you're getting an opportunity here against one of the best teams in the country. Mm-hmm. And you have that opportunity to showcase what you've got as well to a national audience coming up tomorrow morning and show what K-State football is. And I think that's probably just as big win or lose in this kind of game is, you know, if there's a guy that's leaning on the fence of where he wants to go to school, you can show, hey, we were in the Big 12 championship game. We're about to go to the Sugar Bowl. This is a program that is in the right spot. And yes. So that's what tomorrow means for me more than even what's on the field and the product that they put out.
You know, well, who are you picking?
I'm actually going to pick K-State to win.
Oh, that's, a kiss of death, man.
I don't know if that's my heart or not. Mm-hmm. Probably a little bit, but mm-hmm. I feel like they had the opportunity and should have beat them the first time. Mm-hmm. And I think they have the team that it takes to beat them. Mm-hmm. Now, execution's always going to be a part of that and how that all goes, but I'll pick K-State by a field goal.
K-State's 1-2 in the Big 12 title game. They defeated number one Oklahoma in 2003. Of course, they lost the tough one, of course, people don't want to think about it as a K-State fan, 98 to Texas A&M, cost them a chance in the national championship game. And in 2000, they lost to number one Oklahoma. So they're 1-2, and they have a chance to even that record, 2-2. TCU, I think unless TCU gets blown out, I think it does look like TCU's going to be in the playoff based on what everybody seems to be talking about now. I mean, if anybody has any kind of common sense and logic, can understand that why should TCU be punished for playing a team a second time who they already beat by 10 as long as they don't get blown out? And even if they do, I mean, Ohio State got blown out at home by Michigan, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, and Alabama lost twice, and TCU's isn't allowed one bad day. I mean, you know, Oklahoma lost the championship game, got rolled by K-State back in 03 and still went to the BCS championship game. Of course, before that Big 12 title game, there were people actually saying Oklahoma might be the greatest team ever.
Yeah.
Of course, they said the same thing about USC.
They lost two games.
And then USC lost to Texas in the Rose Bowl, if you remember that, too, because of Vince Young. So, I don't know which way to go. I think this might be the best of all the conference championship games to be. Well, Utah and USC tonight's going to be really, really good, I think. That's at Las Vegas, 7 o'clock, number 4 USC against number 11 Utah. If USC wins, they're in the playoff. If they lose, then it opens the door for Ohio State and maybe even Alabama, too. You know, I think a lot of people are putting so much stock in the first matchup, and they're saying, well, you know, if Will Howard played the whole game, we would have won. You know, or if Adrian Martinez even played the whole game, we would have won. If Jake Rubley didn't play at all, we would have won. And K-State had a lot of injuries they dealt with in that game. I get all that, too. TCU just put up 62, and they don't have their full allotment of offensive players. They should for tomorrow. They have receivers that are tough to deal with. K-State's got injuries in the secondary that they didn't have back then at that time. I mean, you got Kobe Savage is out. You got others out. That's huge. And the other thing I will say that I think is too much stock being put into it, TCU now has more tape of Will Howard to prepare for.
Sure.
and they know Will Howard's going to play the whole game. Now, Adrian Martinez, it sounds like, is cleared to where he could maybe have a special package and he comes in the game and does something. That's possible. If I'm TCU, I'm not overly concerned about Adrian Martinez because I think Will Howard's the guy that they're going to go with, so I'm going to focus on Will Howard. So I have more time to prepare for Will Howard compared to last time when Will Howard came in relief of Adrian Martinez. So I think the first game, I think some people are putting way too much stock in it. I don't think a lot of that game impacts anything tomorrow. On top of it, this is a conference title game in a neutral site. So TCU won't have a home game, although it is in Texas, but there's going to be a ton of K-State fans there. There'll be a lot of purple, no matter what, in the stands tomorrow morning. But I think we may be putting too much stock in. Well, K-State was up 28-10 the first time around. That doesn't apply tomorrow.
No, the number doesn't for me. The fact they played with them does apply to that because I know that they can do it, right?
Yeah.
But the number of 28-10, that's not even in my thought process of where tomorrow's game will go because it's a whole different day. Like you said, it's a whole different place. Yeah, it is 22 minutes, I believe, from TCU Stadium to AT&T Stadium. Mm-hmm. Somebody was like, no Texas in this game. It's going to be all K-State fans in the stadium. I'm like, let me inform you that Fort Worth is 22 minutes from AT&T Stadium.
It's closer than Austin.
hello?
Yeah.
TCU is going to have plenty of fans there. And I think it'll be a great atmosphere to be in. Somebody asked me if I wanted to go. I'm like, no, I'm not going to drive through the night after doing a basketball game the night to go down to Arlington. So, but yeah, no, I don't think it has much of anything to do with what happened the first time around as far as how that game went. We just know that these two teams, if they're playing at capability, can probably be pretty evenly matched.
I will say this, K-State usually, when they're really good, and even when they're not even that great, they're always seems to be always good at special teams. And that sometimes, very often, is the deciding factor. Mm-hmm. I mean, if K-State returns a kick for a touchdown, your chances of winning are like 70 to 80%. So if you get offensive a defensive touchdown or a special teams touchdown. So I would be concerned, though, with K-State's secondary, that K-State's got to get a pass rush.
Uh-huh.
Because if they don't, and Duggan is very good at moving around and making plays with his legs, but they've got two very tall targets, and then they got a running back that's first team all conference. TCU can beat you throwing it; they can beat you running it. I don't think their defense is dominant certainly. And K-State's offense has been clicking pretty well, 40 points per game over the last five, which would rank fifth nationally among Power Five schools over the last five games. Now there have been a few teams they've played that aren't very good defensively, including KU last week. Having said that, they still put up those points with a backup quarterback, although, as we can tell now, he plays like he's a starting quarterback.
Yeah, he's a starting quarterback at this point in his career after starting so many games last year and now this year.
Right. Despite the travesty of not being Big 12 selection for playing 4.5 games. So I really don't know which way to go on this game myself. I think that there's a little extra pressure, obviously, on TCU in case, like, if we lose, are we out? So I'm gonna go with K-State as well, and it's a double kiss of death. I said 3 weeks ago K-State's gonna spoil the party and cost the Big 12 again. Now it might not actually cost the Big 12, possibly. I will say this: I hope it works out for both. I don't want to see K-State blow them out. I don't want to see a blowout either way. I want to see a great football game and let the best team win at the end, and don't let the official decide it. Okay, and I think K-State wins by a field goal. And if that happens, I think TCU's in the playoff, and I think K-State obviously is in the Sugar. And everybody's happy except TCU doesn't get to hoist the Big 12 trophy, but they get to go where K-State doesn't, and that's a 4-team playoff.
Yeah, I can't say the same. I'd like to see K-State win 35-7 just like they did the last time they won the Big 12 championship game.
You probably enjoyed it more when it was Oklahoma than TCU.
Absolutely,
though.
Yeah. I don't have anything against TCU. Yeah, the Oklahoma thing was just icing on the cake of having a blowout win, and they're the best team ever. You talk about special teams too, by the way, and it doesn't always have to be your special teams, right?
Right.
Oklahoma missed three field goals in that game in 2003. So that's an example of they had opportunities early in the game to at least try to keep it close, and DeCarlo was missing every time.
Right? KU fumbled a ball at the five last week.
Yeah, muff a punt. Yeah, it's like it's not always like what you're doing.
Sure.
Now, if you're backing a guy up and making him go backwards and he makes a mistake, it was still a good punt from Zentner, right? You know,
sure.
But it's still them, probably something they shouldn't be doing. And so special teams we've seen with the Chiefs this year can hurt you just as much as having a good special teams can help you.
No doubt.
And so that's another point of contention there with special teams.
All right. Give me a score. You got I got K-State winning. I got K-State winning 30-27.
I was going to say 31-28.
Wow. Okay, Jason, who you got?
I'll take TCU.
Ah, there you go.
28-24.
All right. So we're not really saying a gigantic shootout, but right. There'll be some offense, some decent defense.
That's the thing is, like, both of these offenses can cook, but they do play defense on both sides. Like, if they can get good and be good defensive teams.
No, I agree with you. All right. So if K-State wins, like we said, they go in the Sugar Bowl from what we understand. And if they lose, they're going to the Sugar Bowl. And if TCU wins, they're in the playoff. If they lose, they very well may still be in the playoff. According to some, the only drama for the college football playoff already happens tonight, and we got nothing to worry about tomorrow. I don't know. Some of you believe that. Some of you may not. Number four USC takes on number 11 Utah, 7 o'clock tonight in the Pac-12 title game in Las Vegas. I saw the first game. It was an absolute thriller. And Utah went for two to win the game at home, and they got the two, and they won by one. You know, this is another tough one for me. When I start to say USC is going to win, I look at Utah's had rematches in the Pac-12 title game before, and they've destroyed them. They did it to Oregon before. And nobody's giving Utah much of a chance to win, which is crazy because they're the ones that won the first matchup. Oh, well, you know, they had to go for two to win. Well, they were in position to go for two and win. The USC's defense is not – Lincoln Riley, he took everything he had Oklahoma, moved it to USC, including the quarterback Caleb Williams. USC is like Oklahoma. They score a lot of points. They're flashy on offense, got a great quarterback. They put up lots of points and yards, and their defense isn't that good. Utah has weapons on offense. So – I tell you what, I would love this to be simple. USC, TCU, Michigan, Georgia win. It rarely is that simple. I've already picked K-State to beat TCU, but I think TCU's still in the playoff. But I think there's going to be somebody that's on the outside looking in and gets in, and that means USC has to lose tonight. I'm going to pick Utah to do it again. Utah's going to play loose. USC's got everything. USC knows they have to win.
Yeah.
Like, they know for sure they have to win. They're not in if they lose. Whereas TCU, maybe we can lose and get in. USC, there is no room for error. And so I think USC's defense might come back to bind them tonight. I'll say Utah does the double dip and ruins things for Southern Cal.
I didn't see the first game, so I can't go on that. But
USC's the more talented team, but that don't mean nothing.
No, it doesn't, especially this time of year. It's tough to pick this one for sure. I'm going to go with USC.
Okay. I think it's going to be a great game.
Close game either way.
I'd love to watch it, but I'll be watching basketball. Number one, Georgia against number 14 LSU at 3 o'clock tomorrow in Atlanta. Now, see, a lot of people automatically say Georgia's going to cruise and win this game. LSU, they've obviously looked past A&M. LSU was embarrassed by losing to A&M. Is it Daniels kid? I thought I saw some news about their quarterback yesterday. Let me see here.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Because... I thought I saw some news on him. Okay, he will play. All right, he will play. He's had an injury he's been dealing with, but he will play. And that, obviously, if he doesn't, then all kinds of problems. Because he took a lot of hits and was walking in a boot after the game against Texas A&M. But it doesn't sound like he's 100%. Yeah, he has to be 100%, I think, for them to have a chance to pull off the upset. I'll take Georgia, but I think that may be closer than people think.
Yeah, I would pick Georgia by
Georgia's favored by 17.
Yeah.
Yeah. Michigan, Purdue, everybody's going to say Michigan's going to roll. I think this game as well. Purdue can throw the ball. Jeff Brohm, the head coach of Purdue, is 3-0 against top three teams in his career. He's never lost to a top three team at Purdue, according to what I saw yesterday, if that's correct. I think he was 3-0, or he's 2-0. Look out, Michigan.
Yeah.
You know, this is the perfect trap game, and I know it sounds stupid to say because, well, it's a conference title game. How's it a trap game? Because the playoff is on the horizon, and you just beat Ohio State and crushed them in the second half in Columbus. You beat Ohio State 2 years in a row. You're feeling great about yourselves. Everybody all week long is talking about how awesome you are, forgetting that you hadn't beaten anybody really all year long except Penn State until that game. You start to defeat off of it. Your head gets a little bigger. You have a little bit bigger ego, and you walk into a Purdue. Purdue's like, dude, nobody thinks we have any chance. We believe we can. And Michigan is a type of team I think you can beat if you get off to a good start, because Michigan, I think, is a great team that if they get down two scores, I think Michigan will struggle, even though they were down one score against Ohio State and came back. I think this game's going to be tougher than people think as well. I don't have the guts to pick Purdue to win this game, but I would not be surprised if they did. If they did, I think Michigan's still in the playoff and should be, honestly. I think the only thing that affects this is who gets in. If there's an open spot, is Ohio State or Alabama? I think that's what the impact is if Purdue beats Michigan, because people are going to say, well, Alabama should get in Ohio State because Ohio State's loss wasn't that great because Purdue beat Michigan. But I think this is going to be a lot tougher game than people think. But I'll go with Michigan by a touchdown.
Yeah, if I'm Michigan, I kind of want to play Georgia again because of what happened last year in the semifinals, but I want to play them in the national championship. So yeah. I want to get a situation here, like be focused, get that number two spot so I don't have to see Georgia. I don't have to risk moving down to number four and playing Georgia again in the semifinals. That's what I wouldn't want to do if I was Michigan. Again, I do want the opportunity to play them again, but I would want it to be in the national championship.
Number nine, Clemson. So you taking Michigan?
Michigan, I'm picking.
Okay.
Yeah.
Clemson against number 23, North Carolina. Clemson, number nine. Clemson, would if they won, they could say, hey, we're conference champions. We should be ahead of Alabama, maybe, and Ohio State to get in the playoff, even though they have two losses. I don't think Clemson has much of a chance to get in, but if they win, they might have a shot. That's tomorrow night at 7 o'clock for the ACC title. North Carolina has a horrible defense, by the way. All right, Thursday night football, NFL. It was the Bills and the Patriots.
Can they make it pay off here? Allen running and throws, and it's caught by Gabe Davis in the end zone.
Bills win 24-10 in Foxborough. Bills keep pace in the second spot in the AFC playoff standings, 9-3. Patriots 6-6. And of course, the Chiefs, they get to play the Bengals in Cincinnati. And really, this looks like the only tough game on their schedule the rest of the way, except with maybe Seattle at home. You do have a game with the Raiders, a rivalry game at the end of the year. Who knows there? Maybe the Chiefs won't have to do anything that game, have everything wrapped up. I think the Chiefs are locked to be the number one seed as long as Buffalo doesn't run the table and the Chiefs don't have a whole bunch of injuries or trip up in like a game like the Colts. I think the Chiefs can lose tomorrow or Sunday against the Bengals and still get the number one seed. I think it's highly likely they would. The Bills and Dolphins got to play one more time. That cancels one of them out. The Ravens canceled themselves out by blowing another game last week. So the only place, the only worry you have to have is Dolphins-Bills. The loser of the Dolphins-Bills' second matchup is the only team you got to worry about that could get the one seed over yourself. Titans have four losses. The Bengals, even if they have the tiebreaker and beat you, you're still a game up in the standings. So I don't think – I know the Chiefs really, really badly want to win this game. There's no doubt about it. That, you know, it was the Bengals that ended everything in the NFC title game. The Chiefs were cruising until that decision to try to go over touchdown, and then they threw it to Tyreek Hill short of the end zone. That's well documented. We know what happened afterwards. Mahomes looked like a shell of himself. I even brought up the possibility that if you ever believe a game is rigged, you might want to look at that second half, because Mahomes had guys wide open, and he would not throw it. It still blows my mind what happened that second half last year. Now, the easy thing would have been Andy Reid actually ran the damn ball, but he didn't. I mean, they were averaging 7 yards a carry, and he refused. Now, Andy Reid said the other day, well, you know, they rushed three, and or they had eight in coverage and rushed three, but we've learned from that. You should have learned from that during the game last year. McKinnon was running over him, and you would not give him the ball. So I'm still a little bit bitter about it. The Chiefs should have been in the Super Bowl. They should have. And that's on, to me, I think it's on Andy Reid as much as it is Patrick Mahomes. Having said that, I wouldn't trade either one of them for anything. So here's Mahomes. You know the Chiefs are ready to go for the Bengals, who beat them not once but twice. Beat them in the regular season. The Chiefs' defense was horrible and gave up big third and long and then had to watch the Bengals milk the final 6 minutes off the clock. Chiefs used all the timeouts, and then the Bengals kicked the game-winning field goal. Ja'Marr Chase was unstoppable. The playoff game, Chiefs did a much better job against Ja'Marr Chase, had the big lead, and then couldn't hold it. The defense for the Chiefs, I think, is improved, so that helps going in this matchup. The Bengals are going to have Joe Mixon back more than likely for a concussion. Ja'Marr Chase is supposed to be back, and they've been winning five of the last six without Chase, which is impressive. Joe Burrow's playing pretty well. I think the X factor is you have to, just like the AFC title game, you got to get pressure on Burrow. And Burrow got sacked left and right by everybody except by the Chiefs only one time in the AFC title game. That cost them the game. They couldn't get him on the turf. It's going to be the same thing tomorrow or Sunday, in my opinion. You got to get pressure on Burrow. You do that, he's going to make a mistake. He's prone to making mistakes if you get pressure on him. If you don't, it could be a long day. So Mahomes, ready to rock and roll.
Yeah, I don't know if it means more. I think you got to keep stuff in perspective. It's a brand new football season. Obviously, anytime that someone beats you the year before, you want to beat them, especially in a game like they beat us in to go to the Super Bowl. And we understand it's a great football team that's playing great football right now. So we'll go out there and put our best effort forward and try to play our best football and try to get that win, because it's a big win in the season to try to hold that number one seed and win our division.
Like I said, I think they can lose this game Sunday, and they'll be just fine for the number one seed and home field advantage in the playoffs, if that's super important to you. We've proven the last few years that it's not that big a deal. It doesn't guarantee any success at all in the playoffs. See the Titans, see the Ravens, see the Green Bay Packers. See the Chiefs at home field last year, even though they weren't the one seed, they got home field in the AFC title game, and they're 2-2 with home field advantage in the AFC title games and under Mahomes and Reed's tutelage. Here's Andy Reid on this year's Bengals.
Yeah, well, they're doing a good job. I mean, it's kind of the same stuff that they've been doing. They've got most of their guys back playing at a high level. The games that they have lost, they lost just by a few points, with the exception of the Browns. So very similar. Good, solid football, both sides of the ball and special teams.
Listen, these two teams could play again in the divisional round. There's no doubt. In fact, it is impossible that if Chiefs end up being a two, they might, maybe the Bengals be the seven. You could easily see a rematch. And I will tell you this, I don't care if they lose Sunday or not. If they do, I just want to win that rematch in the playoffs.
Yeah.
All right. Chiefs, Bengals, 3:25 Sunday, pregame at 2 o'clock on Z96.3 The Lake. Who you picking?
I got the Chiefs.
Got the Chiefs. All right, they're a 2.5-point favorite. What's your score?
31-24.
All right. Dusty, who you got?
Yeah, I'm gonna go Chiefs 35-24.
Wow. I got the Bengals. I got the Bengals winning this game. I don't like Justin Reed's bulletin board material he threw out there. Have you seen that? Didn't even know who the tight end was for the Bengals, and then said he was going to lock him up. Ja'Marr Chase is back. That's going to give the Bengals a spark. I do think the Chiefs feel the pressure to prove a point to everybody that we are the best team, and nobody's had their number. Nobody's had their number the last few years. Nobody's had their number. But last year, the Bengals beat them twice. And Chiefs fans make excuses. Oh, you know, Spags wouldn't have blitzed, all-out blitz. We would have stopped them there. And, well, you know, in the playoff game, if we would have just kicked the field goal for halftime. Ifs, ands, and buts, and whatever, nuts. The bottom line is they lost twice to the Bengals. And in crunch time, the Chiefs didn't get it done with their defense. And offensively in the AFC title game, they disappeared, including Mahomes. So there are some demons to exercise, and I understand that people automatically think this is payback day for the Chiefs Sunday, and it very well could be. I'm not saying the Chiefs can't win, but I do think there's something there. I do think there's something there, and it comes all down to the Bengals' offensive line against the Chiefs' front four. Can the Chiefs get pressure? And we know the Chiefs have failed in other big games of not getting pressure. And if they don't get pressure without, if they got a blitz, the Chiefs are going to get burned. Now, they might make some plays, don't get me wrong, but they're going to get burned at times. The secondary is younger than last year. I don't like Reed doing the bulletin board material with what he put out there. I mean, I love his confidence, but there was no need for it. The Bengals were already psyched for the game, but I think it provides them with even more of a narrower focus. The Bengals have a lot to play for here. If they win, they're still at the top of their division. Right? They would love to have a first-round game at home. They're technically not out of the number one seed race if they knock off the Chiefs. Chiefs stumble. Bengals went out. Bengals have the tiebreaker over the Chiefs. The Chiefs, I think, have more room for error, obviously, as we pointed out with the rest of their schedule, and the fact that they have a two-game lead over the Bengals as it sits today. But I think the Bengals win this game 35-31.
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I just picked the Chiefs, but I kind of think the Bengals, you know, they have more to play for this week, whether it's to solidify their spot in the playoffs or make a charge towards the front of the pack, or to kind of hold on the back end of it as well. I just think they have a little bit more to play for, so I wouldn't be surprised if you're right.
All right. So you guys picking Chiefs? I hope you're right.
I'm still picking the Chiefs.
I'll take the Bengals in that one. World Cup tomorrow. It is the round of 16. What a day for sports. You can watch football and then football. Football at 9 a.m. or soccer. I love the Peyton Manning, David Beckham commercial. That's awesome. So 9 o'clock, Netherlands, USA. A couple guys that are going to be questionable. Pulisic, the hero of the game who gave up his manhood for the USA to get a win and get a goal. He may or may not play. He says he's going to. We'll see how effective he is against the Netherlands. Tomorrow at 9 a.m., the knockout round on Fox. And you can watch Big 12 title game at 11 a.m., K-State, TCU. Then you can watch the SEC title game in the afternoon. And you can watch the ACC or Big Ten title game in the evening. Yeah, I just planned your Saturday for you, folks. There you go. All right, USA, Netherlands, who are you picking?
Netherlands.
Netherlands.
Probably Netherlands.
Man, we're un-American.
Yeah. Un-American. No ties, though. No ties.
No ties. That's right. We got knockout now. Yeah. So we got to determine a winner. Shouldn't every game be knockout, really, honestly? But, hey, I won't go there. Barkley guaranteed the USA is going to beat Netherlands, which means that they're going to lose. And I feel confident that the Netherlands are going to win.
You feel even better about this.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right, high school basketball tonight. Lakeside Tescott on Z96.3 Lake. And Beloit at Concordia on KDA Country 94. Kickoff basketball season tonight. We had results from last night. The Dusty Area went over. That's posted at NCKSports.com. Enjoy all the action. Have a great weekend.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.